Whilst these cards are very expensive, if you invest in something that's interesting and interactive and actually does something extra than just handing over your contact details, it allows people to get really, really excited about it. They link up with their childhood, playing with things kind of attitude, and it makes them remember.
Welcome back to the Motherlode Marketing Podcast. AKA marketing is broken. What are we going to do about it? My name's Cameron Riley. I'm the principal consultant of motherlode.com.au. We do marketing strategy for clients up and down the east coast of Australia. But we're based in Brisbane. And what we try and do with this podcast is try and figure out why marketing is broken, why it is so ineffective, why marketers in this country tend to just focus on features and benefits and don't really talk about customer problems and solving customer problems and getting a deep, deep understanding of who their customer is so they can do more one-to-one marketing. And we do that by getting on experts from around the country and asking them what they do that makes a difference to their clients and how they're trying in their own small way to really improve marketing. You know, marketing shouldn't be a dirty word. And it is. Quite often when I introduce myself to people, I feel a little bit dirty by saying, hey, I do marketing strategy. I'm a marketing consultant. It always reminds me of that Bill Hicks sketch. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it doesn't matter. But I often describe myself, well, I'm a marketing strategy consultant, but I'm one of the good guys. And I back that up by saying, you know, to me, what marketing is about is helping businesses solve problems better and communicate how they solve those problems. You know, if business is about solving problems and making people's lives better, then I feel good about that. I can sleep at night in my role as helping good businesses that really solve people's problems well, helping them get the word out about how they can make those lives better, right? Okay. So my guest today, let me introduce herself and then I'll tell you a little bit about why I invited her on the show.
I'm Claire Hamilton and I'm from Filter Studio. I'm a communication designer and basically run a small branding studio. And we help businesses develop visual branding tools such as logos and other marketing collateral. And
I'm going to cut Claire off there and tell you the story about why I have invited Claire on. Now, I first met Claire probably 6 months ago and we had a coffee. She showed me her own business card and some of the cards she had developed for some of her clients. Now, I was so impressed with the creativity of her work. Now, these are just business cards, right? And logos on business cards. Normally when somebody gives me a business card, I take a photo of it into Evernote and then I throw it away. The cards that Claire gave me 6 months ago, I still have in my business case today and I pull them out whenever I'm in a meeting with a client. If we start talking about branding or logo issues, I show them these cards and say, look at what this woman can do. And without failure, they all go, wow, can I have that? And I say, no. And then they say, can I take a photo of it? And I say, sure, go ahead. Because her work is that good. If you haven't been up to the Motherlode website to see the blog post that's associated with this podcast, go and have a look. Or go up to her website. We'll give you the domain name at the end of the show. So I asked Claire to talk about some of the common mistakes that she sees clients make when it comes to branding or getting a logo designed. One of the things that she talked about was the fact that, you know, there's these crowdsourcing sites where you can go and get a logo designed and it looks pretty cheap on the surface, but there are some things that you should take into consideration before you get your logo designed using one of those services.
Let's say it's a crowdsourced logo from 99 Designs or some kind of a website like that. The logo that you end up with it's not really tailored to your business very specifically. It's let's say the logo from a technical perspective is full colour, it's got a nice gradient in the background, it looks gorgeous, everything about it's lovely, but then you say, okay, I want to embroider that on a t-shirt. Well, then you can't really do that. There's specific technical requirements when you're doing like for specific applications like signage or so. Thinking through and asking those questions, what am I using my logo for, is really, really important to actually the design of the logo in the first place. So it's not just a make it pretty logo that, you know, you just pick one that, you know, oh, there's a font and there's an icon that looks great, let's go with it. It's just, it should be more specific and understood, I guess.
You know, sometimes I get the impression that some businesses think that a logo isn't important. It's sort of something that you can knock out in half an hour. I had a client recently, quite a successful business, you know, they turn over millions and millions of dollars a year, very, very high-end brand, and they were like, oh, we'll just go to 99 Designs and pay $400 to get a logo designed. And I said to them, well, you know, really, don't you want to think a lot more deeply about what you want your brand to represent, what you want it to say? I mean, the classic is, you know, you think of the Apple logo. I mean, just looking at that logo, you know so much about what that business stands for from that logo. I mean, and that's not by accident. That's been carefully designed and refined over decades. It's not something that you just throw together.
I most of the time when I get requested to do new logos for companies, it's, oh, hey, I need a graphic designer to design me a business card. And I say, okay, well, just send me your logo and all your assets. And they go, oh, we don't have a logo. That's what we need a business card for. And I said, no, you don't need a business card. You need a logo. And then we'll work out everything else that you need after we do that process. Like, that shouldn't be just a flippant, oh, we need a logo. Well, who are you selling it to? What's your target audience? What is the market strategy behind that logo? And then that logo should be mirroring exactly who your business is. Like, what's your values? What's the personality of the company? And, you know, what's the culture that you want to represent? And, you know, I can't imagine that, you know, you get a company like, let's say McDonald's, for instance, that they're not going to be looking at, like, it's a simple M, yes, we could all design that, but the behind that is such a bigger, more important and researched system and marketing system that's gone into that has actually influenced and given information to a designer to create that mark.
So what makes a good logo? What are the elements?
Obviously, something that is easily recognisable is number one. Keeping it as simple as possible would be amazing. It's kind of like if you were to describe somebody's personality as a human and you say, oh, well, they're very kind and they're pretty and they're funny and all these sorts of things. But when you relate all of those attributes to a person, you name them, let's say their name's Cameron, let's say. All of those attributes go into this one name. And when you know that person, you get to know who that person actually is. That one name represents all of those things to you and it reminds you of that. So I guess a logo is kind of that sort of a theory to me, that you have everything rolled into and edited down into one specific icon or visual mark that you relate to a specific set of attributes and personality and culture. So the best logos are the ones that have supporting brands and supporting products. So quality, if your brand is supposed to be representing quality and all these sorts of things, I just think that
Are there any brands that don't represent quality?
Well,
do people come to you and say, I've got a business and I want you to design a logo for it, and what we want to convey is that our products are shit?
Yeah, probably not. But the one I hear the most is, we're innovative. and I think everyone's innovative, or that everyone thinks they're innovative. Not everyone is quality. Not everyone is innovative. But, everybody wants to be that.
I hear that a lot from clients too. When we're doing marketing strategy, I say, well, you know, tell me what makes your business unique. They say, well, you know, we have the highest quality products. Really? According to whom? Can you back that up? Well, we give the best customer service. Really? How do you know? Have you measured that against your competitors? When was the last time you surveyed your customers versus your competitors? What metrics are you using? It's, you can't just walk around and say that stuff. Needs to be backed up with some, you know, some real life data. And if you're trying to position your business as those things, when it's not, then fix the core problem. The logo isn't going to fix the problem. Let's take a break from a moment. I'm going to do an ad. If you like listening to podcasts, you should go and have a listen to at least one of the other podcasts that I produce. If you like history in particular, if you like learning about history in a way that's fun and entertaining, check out lifeofcaesar.com. My podcast with Ray Harris, we've been going since late last year. I think we're about 15 or 16 episodes in, telling the story of Julius Caesar, one of the most famous people in all of history. The show is very popular. We've got 80,000 listeners, I think, at the moment. I think we're the number, well, we're in the top 40 podcasts out of all of podcasts in Australia. Sometimes we're up around the top 20, depending on what day you look at it. We're one of the top 100 podcasts in the United States. It's one of the top history, society and culture podcasts, both in the United States and Australia. People seem to like it, so if you like podcasts, check it out, lifeofcaesar.com. All right, enough of me pimping my other work. Back to Claire. Just to show you the difference between going to 99designs and engaging someone like Claire to do your logo, I wanted her to walk you through a recent experience that she had developing a logo for Israel. Not the country, the photographer.
A guy called Israel. He's a photographer and director, and he's incredible. He does beautiful, beautiful work, very, very sensitive. And I was approached to design a logo for him. But the problem is, because he's so, like, he's a creative himself, designing a logo for a guy who has very, very personal work, and even his corporate, I say in inverted commas, corporate work is still very, it's sexy is the wrong word, but it's beautiful, sensitive, sensual kind of work. It's very personal to him. And to design a logo for him kind of freaks me out from a perspective of how do you design something that is loose enough for him but still workable in a branding sense. So I told him that he needed to be a part of it, that there's no way he can't collaborate on his own logo because he's too creative and he needs to own and champion this logo. So I ended up saying to him, all right, I want you to sit down and write your name millions of times and in uppercase and lowercase and go crazy. So he went off and I basically made him design his own logo, really. He went off and did his own sketches and whatever, came back. I took all those. He was quite, you know, humbled about his signature because he doesn't like his writing necessarily. But I've taken little bits of each letter form, the angle of the strokes that he uses, so that part of the way he moves his hand when he writes and part of the style that he's grown up with his handwriting, like how do you draw an S and how do you draw an R and those sorts of things, I could actually take little segments from every little letter form that he's got in his logo or in his in his handwriting and come back and scan all that in and then piece together the perfect sections of each of his letter forms into one, like Israel Rivera logo. Then I've expanded it, made it larger, and then taken a calligraphy Japanese script brush, so we had an organic kind of technique involved, and actually trace over his handwriting multiple times. I've got a book full, so it was quite a new technique for me as well. So really what we've ended up with is sort of a brush, organic styled Japanese, you know, hair brush, logo that's been vectorized, and it's part of me because it uses my angles of how I use the brush strokes, but it also is part of him that it's his handwriting and the way he actually uses letter forms. So it's really exciting to see that one. That's probably been the most exciting logo that I've done recently.
So as you can see, Claire put a lot more thinking and work into this than you're going to get out of 99 Designs. But she didn't end there. She took it one step further.
I kept thinking, oh, well, okay, we've designed this logo that's just beautiful and it's half of him and it's half of me, and collaboratively we've produced this beautiful icon. How do we design a business card that matches the same amount of, precision and sensitivity that we've gone in there? And I thought, well, again, he needs to have something where we show some of his imagery on his business card. But then, you know, we've seen that all before, where you have a photo of, you know, photographers tend to put a lot of their photos on their business cards all the time, and that's all good, but it only gives them one photo, and it doesn't really, it might pigeonhole them depending on which photo the recipient of the card gets on the back of their card. So they might miss out on work because, you know, it's not in the same style that the client might want. So what we decided to do was to, while still selecting specific images for Israel's cards, we thought it'd be good if we could link it to a developing process. Like, he works collaboratively, so why don't we produce the card in a way that collaborates with different suppliers and actually get Israel involved, get the suppliers involved, get everybody actually passionate about something. And it's, bearing in mind, it's just a business card, but why does it have to be just a business card? So what we ended up doing is I had a look on a lot of Google websites, a lot of research. It was something that I didn't really see. It was particularly, you know, it wasn't really around much in a short run process. And it's something called thermochromic ink. Now, I went on to eBay. I purchased some of this ink from an American spray painting place that had a specific pigment-based powder that you could mix up with your ink and actually test it on the press. What this ink does, if you imagine a photograph of a lady, let's say, and then across the top of that photograph, we just paint completely black ink. Now, when this ink is heated up to 31 degrees, so if you rub it with your hands or, you know, just warm it, it goes completely clear. So if you have a business card and you're holding it in your hand, you basically rub the top of it, or you have to do something to the card to be able to cause a reaction, a heat reaction, and then see the underlying image. So it's a bit hard to explain, I guess, over podcast, but it's definitely something where the process of how we actually put together the cards, we had Creative Emporium, which was a letterpress company. We had Daroji, which is a finishing print company, and they did a fantastic job doing a lot of research on the thermochromic ink side of things. We had the Paper Rep, which was KW Doggett's, and also Printcraft. So we had so many different companies all included in collaborating with each other. So to create the card, it was collaborative. When you receive the final product, like the actual final card, you have to collaborate yourself with the card to be able to see what the photo is. So everything about that card, in its meaning, in what it's actually resulting in, is collaborative, and you have to engage with it. And the amount of people, when we launched the card, which was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago now, it went nuts. Everybody we showed the card to would actually go, oh my goodness, oh wow, and they'd rub the card and they say, oh wow, you can really, oh, that's so fun. And they sort of, they got a bit of a childlike excitement about it. And because of that, I actually had people coming up to me saying, oh hey, do you have any of Israel's cards? And I said, well, I don't, it's his card, go and talk to him. And so off they go and talk to Israel, and Israel ended up handing out business cards like they were confetti, which stressed me out because they were quite expensive. But it's just, and obviously quite difficult to achieve, but we've had that response with a number of business cards, that the traditional thought of a business card is hand out a business card and it's just to give your contact details over. But it's changing. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, we've got another business card, which is a wooden business card, and the card breaks into three pieces. It's for a company called Longbow, which is another photographer. For some reason, the photographers are very creative and supportive of interesting business cards. But the Longbow business cards snap into three pieces, giving you a top slimline card and a bottom slimline card, identical, and the centerpiece is a bow, like a bow and arrow, that you can create your own bow and arrow with. And actually, it's a functional wooden bow and arrow because the card is actually made from a three-ply mahogany. So it's really interesting that whilst these cards are very expensive, if you invest in something that's interesting and interactive and actually does something extra than just handing over your contact details, it allows people to get really, really excited about it. They link up with their childhood, you know, playing with things kind of attitude, and it makes them remember, and that's all you're trying to do. If a business card costs you $8 per business card, if you actually make a genuine connection where that business card doesn't actually get put away or thrown out after it goes in their address book filled with 500 people, then that $8 is well worth it, because the wooden business cards have actually been picked up by Gizmodo online, as well as a whole bunch of other social media. So the reach, we've only printed, I think, 100 business cards that were wooden ones, but the reach has been thousands.
If those cards have been covered in sites like Gizmodo, Claire, I suggest it's a lot more than thousands. You're probably talking hundreds of thousands. Anyway, I think that's all the time we have today, folks. I hope you enjoyed that. Check out Claire Hamilton Filter Studio, or go up to the Motherlode website, Motherlode, that's motherlode.com.au. Check out the post for this podcast. We'll have some examples of Claire's work up there. And if you like the podcast, make sure you check out our RSS feed. You can put it into iTunes. There'll be a link up on the website, or you can go onto the iTunes and just search for Motherlode Marketing Podcast and you'll find us. And we've got some great interviews coming up in the next couple of weeks, including Steve Sammartino, famously of the Sammartino Method down in Melbourne. Ex-Grey Advertising, ex-Rentoid Marketing Guru. He's got a new book out that we're going to be talking about. And also Glenn Carlson from Key Person of Interest, the business marketing seminars. I had a chat to him today. He's going to be coming on the show next week as well. So stay tuned. Some more great episodes coming down the pipe. This is Cameron Riley. Thank you for listening. Hope you have a great day.